You're listening to Co-op Mood, a casually serious conversation about playing video games.
This is episode 19. Welcome to the Murder Sandbox.
Let's do this. I'm Sally. You can find me on Twitter at SallyT.
And I'm Shane. You can find me on Twitter at Mundangerous.
All right. Well, here we are in 2021, Shane, our very first episode of the new year.
Mm-hmm. We're actually recording in 2021, not always a given on these,
exactly.
These beginning of year podcasts.
Exactly. So it's the time that people talk about New Year's resolutions. I generally don't make New Year's resolutions because I am sort of neurotic and worried about how well I'm doing at life year round. And I see no reason to, do anything special for the new year. What about you? Are you a New Year's resolution person?
I'm not a New Year's resolution person at all, but you know, constant improvement is my goal and zero improvement is my reality. So here we go.
I feel like we're very aligned on this. So we're going to talk about New Year's gaming resolutions, partially because in looking for video game news, they're just like, I just feel like we're in a real dead zone right now.
Every game has come out. All the reviews are out. Everyone else is trying to go home for the holiday, so they're just posting listicles, right?
Yeah, it's all just like best of 2020 things people are looking forward to in 2021. And I feel like the Cyberpunk 2077 news cycle also just fatigued everyone.
Yeah.
No one has anything else to say or talk about. So here we are talking about our gaming resolutions, which actually, once we decided to talk about this, I was like, I do have some gaming resolutions. There are some things that I want to do in 2021 that I did not do at all in 2020. So let's kick it off, Shane. Do you want to get us started here?
Yeah. So I have an infant or a newborn in the house. So I had to be very reasonable with my gaming resolutions in that probably sure. My most realistic gaming resolution is keep gaming. Because let me tell you, that takes some commitment to actually do.
Yeah.
So, but my gaming resolution is to play more ranked. So when I play games, particularly like, you know, online competitive games, like I always prefer competitive mode. But the reality is like I get frustrated and stressed out when I'm playing for points, even though like, you know, ranking and title and like those things don't actually mean anything to my life. You know, like if I go to work on Monday as a gold League of Legends player instead of a silver League of Legends player instead of a bronze, like that doesn't mean anything to me.
But you'll know. But they know. Won't know, but you'll know.
Exactly. So I have that like, yeah, and then, you know, like, I don't know. Anyway, I really do think like the competitive mode of games is like the better way to play, because that's when people are attempting to take it seriously. But then it comes with this like requisite level of frustration of like when people don't, right? Whereas like when you're playing casually and somebody is just screwing off, you're like, ah, whatever, it doesn't count. Mm-hmm. When you play ranked, it's like, oh, this counts. And then you get frustrated. And then for me, that happens and I quit. And I just go back to playing like the normal mode, right? And mm-hmm. and so like I want to figure out my way to overcome that so that I can play more ranked games because I have less time and I would like to just like have the higher quality experience if I can. Playing it in League of Legends is maybe an exercise in masochism, but I guess I'll report back on December 31st how it went. Or maybe I'll just have quit by then and you'll know how it went.
Well, I love that. I mean, I think that is a totally reasonable resolution. I feel like it aligns with, it's like a nice alignment of like what's possible in your life and what you want your life to be. Because I feel like a lot of times people make New Year's resolutions that like will never, ever, ever work with the life that they have to live.
Right.
And that's why they fail. And I feel like you're starting from a place of realism.
Yes.
So good job.
A place with no aspiration, Sally.
Yeah, that's what makes resolutions work or not work. And right. I think we've nailed it. We're behavior scientists.
All right. What is your New Year's gaming resolution?
Okay. So I have three. One of them is to play fewer $60 AAA games. Mm-hmm. Because it's really rare that I play a $60 AAA game and feel like I got a $60 experience. Like I definitely feel like I got a AAA experience. Like, you know, it's rare that I spend that much money on a game and I play and I don't feel like it's like super polished and like super beautiful and stuff like that. But I feel like those AAA games tend to not be as like stimulating and interesting for me. Mm-hmm. You know, like one of the reasons I haven't started playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla is because my impression of it is that it's going to look really cool and have some cool stuff and be sort of be rewarding to hit the buttons on my controller. But like, it's not going to make me think or feel in any interesting way. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily need every single game I play to make me think or feel interesting things, but I would like it to happen more often than it does. And I find that it happens more when I spend my gaming time on like on indie games, also on shorter games that are like $40 or $50, mm-hmm. not $60 games that are anywhere between like 30 and 120 hours. So that's one thing. The next one is to stop using Game Pass, because although it is like certainly the best deal in video games, it makes me want to download and play games that I just otherwise like would never try because I know I wouldn't be interested in them. And like occasionally that results in me discovering that a game I didn't expect to like, I ended up really liking it. But more often than not, I confirm that like a thing is not for me.
Yeah, I had a very similar experience on Game Pass too, which is why I don't have Game Pass anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. I really like that. Like I felt like I was playing a lot of filler, you know, like it was like, yeah. I'm playing this game because it's free and I downloaded it. And like, maybe like in the next hour, there's going to be something that like turns the corner for me. And like, so rarely did I ever turn that corner. Like usually my impression based on the title and description was spot on and I was wasting my time.
100%. Yeah. And the other thing is like, I was spending a lot of time on Game Pass being like, oh, this is a game that like is kind of in the canon of like amazing games in the history of video games that I've never played, so I should. And the thing about that is like, that sometimes has been really rewarding. Like when I played Shenmue, I had like a religious experience. It was amazing. It was like one of my best gaming experiences ever. But it's also, I've also tried playing other games and like, you know, I'm sure that there are games that, you know, came out in the 90s and early 2000s that were amazing and people had religious experiences playing them and they changed gaming forever. But sometimes you come to those games, you know, 20 years later, 15 years later, and the magic just like isn't there for you. So I need to like just like free myself of the yoke of Game Pass. So that's another thing I'm going to hopefully do. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is like, I want to just be more realistic about the genres I like and don't like. It's so rare that I play a game that I would categorize as something I'm not usually into and end up having a really good experience with it or even like want to finish it. Mm-hmm. And there are some games that it's worth trying. Like Hades is a really good example of like a type of game that I'm not usually into, but I'm really glad I tried because it is just kind of transcendently fun and cool and beautiful and has great music and, you know, but it's just not for me, but I am glad I tried it. But like, I want to only try games and genres I don't like when they are like Hades level intriguing. And I'm mixed about this resolution because it's also cool to like try things that you're not familiar with, but I do it too much. Like I hear people talk about something being awesome and I'm like, ooh, I got to try that. And like, I'm like, okay, I guess this is awesome for that person, but like, I hate it. I've always hated the genre. This isn't for me.
So you won't be picking up Crusader Kings 3 anytime soon?
I just think it's not going to happen for me. Even though it looks amazing, as do so many games that I should never pay for is the thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on that. In the year 2021, let's waste less time.
I love that. I love that. Or like, yeah, like let's like waste time in more fun ways, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Let's waste time efficiently.
Exactly. Exactly.
There's an old Calvin and Hobbes strip that is like the last panel. Calvin says, when you're serious about having fun, it's not very much fun at all. I feel like that's where we're running into right here.
Yeah, we totally are. We're totally like seriousifying something that is meant to be like pretty chill and fun. So exactly. Maybe our resolution in 2022 is going to be to like chill the fuck out about just like gaming resolutions.
Just relax.
Yeah, just relax. I mean, that's the great thing about New Year's resolutions. You set resolutions that like can't possibly be met in the culture and society we live in. And so then like the next year you make the opposite of that resolution. It's just a cycle that goes on and on and on until you die. So I feel like we're nailing it.
Perfect. We're halfway there.
Having gotten our New Year's resolutions out of the way, let's talk about what we're playing right now. Shane, what are you playing?
I am playing the most boring things that I could possibly be playing right now. Hitman 2 and League of Legends. Again, newborn, no time, only being able to do the like absolutely required gaming. So played through Hitman 2. And then, you know, the nice thing about League is that, you know, you can get a 15 to 20 minute game pretty reliably. So I can kind of sneak that in when the baby is asleep or something like that without too much commitment. So been able to do a little bit of that, but it's been tough. And now I'm going back to work, so that's probably going to drop off to zero for a little bit.
Oh man, I think we're going to have to start just like talking about like mobile games. Like we're just going to talk about like Candy Crush and like exactly. Angry Birds. I don't know if that's still a thing.
But I have been playing Knights Black Agents solo ops with my mother, actually, who is here to help us take care of the baby.
Up.
Yes. So we've been doing that. I'm struggling a little bit. I really like Knights Black Agents. So it's a tabletop role-playing game. It's meant for like one-to-one, one GM, one player. It's, you know, it boils down nicely when you've got a baby to take care of between the two of you at like, mm-hmm. you know, 9 p.m. Usually my wife is asleep already, so we're like kind of left to our own devices. And so we've been trying that. I don't think I'm doing a very good job of it. I need to like really track down a good actual play to get like the cadence of the game. Because there's a lot less dice rolling and a lot less like question like, as to what happens than I thought. And it sometimes feels more of like a, I don't know, like an improv game than it is like a role-playing game in a way. But yeah, so I've got that on the table at least.
Are you doing the adventure that's like in the book that comes with?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I like, so it is not the kind of system that I have a ton of experience with. And then also it just has a lot of like, it took all the language of Knights Black Agents and threw it out the window.
Yeah.
So like even the experience I have running that system isn't directly applicable. Like there's some principles that apply. And so that's like, that's the biggest problem that I've had is like that changeover. So I don't really feel confident. I'm not honestly not sure this game works if you don't have a published adventure, because of like the amount of stuff it wants you to have pre-prepared is just like, I don't know. I thought it would be one player, one GM, and that meant a lot of improv. And it seems to me like their approach to one player, one GM is a lot of writing, like a lot of prep.
Yeah.
And so like, that's where I'm struggling a little bit. So I'm just running the adventure that is basically the book.
Yeah. I'm really excited about Knights Black Agent Solo Ops because it is basically, it's kind of like a tabletop board game without a board. Like it comes with all the resources that you need to, you know, put into play with the person you're running the game for. And it, for me, as someone who's never run Knights Black Agents, and I've played Gumshoe games and I really enjoy them, but I cannot wrap my mind around the system to save my life. So this book makes it like I could run this because it just basically hands you everything you need to run it. And it's cool. It's cool and it's interesting. But it, like you said, it's GMing it, I think, is much more like being the person for like who's like facilitating a board game than it is like GMing a traditional like RPG.
Yeah.
You know, so I totally can see why that would be not as like not like what you expected. And also because it does seem like a totally different game than Knights Black Agents. I love that you're playing it with your mom. That's fucking amazing.
Yeah, it's that comes with its own challenges.
Oh man, that's the actual play I want to listen to, by the way.
You do not. What are you playing right now, Sally?
Okay, I got so excited to talk about solo ops. So I'm still playing Breath of the Wild little by little. It's cute and fun and beautiful and all that good stuff. I also decided to treat myself to Spider-Man Miles Morales, which I initially was like, I'm going to wait till I get a PS5 to play this game. And then like the reality of like when that is going to be set in. And I was like, well, fuck it. I'm going to play this game now. And I bought it.
And does it run on PlayStation 4?
It does. It runs. It's great. It's delightful.
No refunds required.
No refunds required. Yeah. So it's great. I mean, this is a great example of like, I think it was either like $40 or $50 and it's like not as long as the original Spider-Man. So it's just like the scope of the game is smaller. It's less expensive. It's just like a delicious little like nugget of a game. Mm-hmm. I really, really like Miles as the protagonist. There's like a lot of great. I think the voice acting is really good. It's as delightful as the first Spider-Man in terms of like flying around the city. It takes place around Christmas time in New York, which is absolutely delightful to me, particularly at this time in my life when I haven't like really been out in the world since March. The thing that like still bothers me about this franchise, this like Spider-Man on PS4 franchise, is that like it is like complete and utter propaganda. Like the cops are like Spider-Man works hand in hand with them, and they're like these great, delightful presence in New York. And I find that like to be kind of, I find it to be really tiresome and also like really out of step with like the current moment that we're in, mm-hmm. you know, but there's a lot of stuff that's like so delightful. Like so in this game, Miles has just moved to Harlem, and there's like a lot in the game that's kind of about like outsiders, like encroaching on neighborhoods, like corporations coming into neighborhoods where Black people and people of color live, and just causing damage and gentrification. And, you know, it's like, I think it's like done with a fairly light touch, but it's also kind of unmissable. And, you know, I'm just really enjoying it. Like Miles is a delightful character. He's like, he has this relationship with his best friend Genki, who's kind of like his Q. He's like the guy who he calls to like do the hacking. You know, they kind of work together, and like Genki does the hacking, and then Spider-Man like punches the dudes. And they have this really amazing like bromance. Like they just are constantly telling each other that they're doing a great job. And Miles is always telling Genki, like, I couldn't do this without you. And Genki's like, you're such a hero. This is so amazing. And it's like, I don't know, man, it's really delightful. And like, I don't want to spoil too much, you know, but like, I don't know, but just, there's just a, you get to rescue a bodega cat and then like pet the cat. It's like a very, like for as much as you're like beating the shit out of people, there's just a lot of really gentle, nice, like upbeat moments, but not in a cheesy way, in a way that actually feels like it. This game feels like it has a lot of heart in a way that like the first Spider-Man game didn't. And I really liked the first Spider-Man game, but you know, I was like, all right, I get it. I'm playing as like Tom Holland, swinging around the city, making quips and being snarky. Like this is fine and fun. But like Miles Morales, it just has heart in a way that I was surprised about and I really love. And I'm excited to keep playing.
So what is the relationship between that and like the film franchise like reboot, right? Like is the video game like tied into the like Into the Spider-Verse film?
Great question that I feel totally unequipped to answer, because I feel like there are people who have a lot of expertise around all the different verses and I completely utterly don't.
Okay, cool. Because I don't know who Miles Morales is. Like, and okay, I've read Spider-Man for a while, and like, and it's like, oh, okay, so there's another Spider-Man, but I don't know anything about him. And I know there was a movie, and okay, cool, whatever.
So, like, okay,
I'm glad people enjoyed it.
Have you seen Into the Spider-Verse?
No.
Okay, so that I would definitely watch. Like, that is like the one Spider-Man movie I have seen. That's not sure. I've seen a couple of them, but that's the one I really like. And Miles Morales is the Spider-Man in Into the Spider-Verse. So I'm not clear on like what came first, and also if Miles Morales appeared in like a comic. I'm sorry, I'm butchering like this entire. This is like a huge important deal for a lot of fans, and I just have no relationship to it. But Miles Morales is the Spider-Man in the movie Into the Spider-Verse. And then I think that this video game is like, it's kind of a continuation of that story, except for the fact that like in the video game, Miles's dad is a cop. And I don't really remember that from the movie, but maybe I'm just misremembering. So there is some relationship between the two, but I'm not sure if it's like complete overlap or just like some things are similar and other things they changed.
Okay. And is there any relationship to the first Spider-Man game, or are they completely like parallel universe kind of games?
Great question that I actually can answer. It is totally a continuation of the first game. It's like, it's not really a sequel, but it's like, it's not a sequel like narratively, but it's sort of like there's continuity between Peter Parker and Miles Morales. And because like, spoiler for the first Spider-Man game that I wouldn't have said if this game wasn't out, the second game wasn't out, but you play as Miles Morales in the first Spider-Man for, I want to say like, one or two missions. I could be misremembering. Okay. So after that game came out, people were like, oh my God, the second game is definitely probably going to be you play as Miles for the whole game, and you do. And it's a fucking goddamn delight.
Awesome. Awesome.
And now it is time to talk about Hitman 2. This is going to be part two of our conversation about Hitman 2. which I'm really excited to get into. So we're just going to like talk a little bit more in depth about really like our experience playing the game. In the last episode, we kind of like explained the gameplay loop. We talked about the mechanics. We talked about kind of just how the game works. But now we're going to get a little deeper into our playing experience. And now we've both finished the game. So Shane. Well,
interesting that you say that actually, even before we talk about that, because I guess we bought different versions of the game.
We most certainly did.
And I finished a very different game than you did.
Yeah, that's very true. So I was playing on PS4, and the game that I bought just came with the original missions in that Hitman 2 was released with. But then you're playing on PC, and yours came with what, like two additional missions, Shane?
Two additional DLC missions, as well as all the Hitman 1 missions. So I think I got like a definitive version or something.
So
what's annoying is that those DLC missions directly advance the plot like in sequence. So I feel like with Hitman 3 coming out in January, like if you don't play those missions or at least know what happens in them, like I assume Hitman 3 will be very confusing. Because yeah. if you just finished where you finished and then like skip to, like there's a huge plot twist in that DLC. Like there's a huge betrayal that like just kind of gets glossed over, I guess, if you just start Hitman 3 without knowing it. This is a good time to mention like we will absolutely be spoiling a few things probably. So yeah.
Yeah, we're going to like spoil the shit out of Hitman 2. I'm hoping that Hitman 3 will come with like a previously on. But I do have to say that like, the overall plot of Hitman 2, I have just a really hard time following or caring about. So hopefully with Hitman 3, it won't really matter too much. So if you're a player like me and you can't follow the story and don't care about it, like just jump right in.
Yeah, it's something.
Yeah. But so Shane, like your playing experience with this game, like now that you've finished it and the DLC and like had some time to like sit with it and think about it, like what are your kind of overall thoughts about the experience of playing the game?
I'm sort of mixed on it. Like what I enjoyed in the game a lot was sort of spotting the pattern and then playing with it and manipulating with it and like, you know, entering through like the window instead of the door and like, you know, doing that kind of like lateral thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't always satisfying when I followed like the mission stories. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, like I stopped doing the mission stories because I just didn't find it fun to go objective to objective. So
yep.
I just started doing it my own way. But then like I didn't think the mechanics did as great of a job of supporting like improvising as I guess I would have hoped for. And I know that's like kind of an unrealistic trade-off of like, hey, I don't want to do it the way you designed the game. Can I do it my way, please? And could you make that way better? So it's like it's a little unfair to like even really critique it that way. But I just found like a lot of times like, you know, where I could find a window to make a hit, the realistic outcome was me like shooting and then running away and hiding, which felt less like an assassin, maybe too realistic of an assassin, you know, like
right.
So it was, I kind of ran into a little bit there, but like, I really did like, you know, it sounds like a big complaint, but in a lot of ways it's a nitpick complaint on account of like the level design, the like mechanics, the interactions with the world, like the, you know, collisions and the like all the different like things that, like those little like listening and spotting and hiding mechanics, like all those things like really do work so
mm-hmm.
well
mm-hmm.
that like you can sit and say like, man, I wish it did all of these things. And then also like, let me experiment and sandbox it more, or at least more cohesively to the way that I want to experiment in sandbox, which is mostly sneaking around and taking one shot with a silenced pistol and walking away clean.
Yeah, it's funny. Like I agree really with your kind of analysis of like how the mission stories feel a little bit too, you're just checking off boxes, but then improvising. I think to improvise and have as like seamless of an experience as you get with the mission stories, you would have to put just a ton of hours into basically casing the joint and observing mm-hmm. the NPCs and the patterns and stuff like that.
And that's something that I absolutely refuse to do.
Yeah. like that's
I refuse to sit around for 15 minutes to just observe the pattern. You know, like I just didn't have time to do that.
I did it a little bit, but I would never, absolutely never put as much time into that as you need to get a good mission rating. I kind of switched between doing mission stories or story missions, whatever they're called. And just to like explain what those are, basically like as you're walking around a level, you'll get a little prompt that says mission story revealing. And it's usually that like you walk by an important NPC who's like talking about something and they will reveal that like their boss, who is your target, is going to be at a certain place at a certain time, or, you know, that there's a certain problem with this kind of equipment or whatever. And you can follow that mission story. And then it sort of like walks you through how to complete the assassination. Mm-hmm. And some of them are like creative and fun and weird. Like, for example, there's like the hippopotamus one, which I never ended up like going back to, but I'm pretty sure that if I had followed that mission story, it would have like had me like get the target trampled by a hippo. But, you know, I do, the thing that I do really, really like about this game, and that it is like, for me, the gameplay loop was really unique, which was that like I would start each level just wandering around, checking things out, casing the joint. And then I would start like infiltrating the places that you have to be in some sort of a disguise to get into. And I would case those areas for a little while. And then once I had a sort of like overall, like more or less working picture of like what the layout was of the level and like who the NPCs were and where people were, I would just try to, you know, eliminate the target and mess it up repeatedly until I figure out how to do it well. And then I would execute mm-hmm.
it. Yep.
And that feels like that is like a really specific just like loop of gameplay. Spending some time in the level, which the level design is just really amazing. And so it is actually one of those games where you just kind of walk around and kind of marvel at like the world that the designers have created. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, I think there are people who do it for much longer than I did and therefore get like 5-star ratings on their missions instead of like 1 or 2, which is what I was getting consistently. But
at least you were getting stars. I got a lot of missions with 0 stars because I just walked in and shot a bunch of people.
That's fucking amazing. Yeah. So, I mean, I really like the rhythm of playing this game. I think it's like unique. I think it's fun and interesting. And I think that this is a game that's like, ends up being in my wheelhouse because of how I decided to play it. And I think like, you know, you can play this game at a much, much, much higher level than either one of us played it and have a totally different experience with it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I also like that you can play it in a sort of messy way and still have a good time.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the things in here that really do work for us. Like what were some of the highlights for you of like how this game is designed?
Okay. So I really like this murder sandbox where you kind of jump from rail to rail. I think that like it is actually a thing that a lot of open world RPGs try to do, or rather I should say, I think it's a thing that a lot of RPGs do, but try to hide. Like a lot of open world RPGs, you're in this loop of like, you do a side mission, then a story mission, then you collect things and you kind of go back and forth. And like open world feels like a little bit of a misnomer because I think open world is often conflated with the idea of a sandbox. And like, you know, the worlds are kind of sandboxes, but also like you do have to level up in a particular way and you are just like doing story missions and side missions and collecting things. So you are kind of on rails, even though the rails are sort of hidden, or the developers have tried to hide the rails. The rails in Hitman 2 feel more obvious. They feel not hidden, but they feel like actually organic to the game and the world of the game. So they do actually, I think that Hitman 2 accomplishes a thing that like a lot of, I keep thinking of The Witcher 3, like that games like The Witcher 3 or like Grand Theft Auto try to achieve, which is kind of really making you feel like you're in an actual sandbox because the rails that you are jumping between, first of all, you truly can like jump between rails and kind of make any choice you want and it will work within the world of the game. I mean, it might not result in you accomplishing what you're trying to accomplish, but like it will work in the sense that like there will be consequences and the AI will respond to you and so on. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that works really well. And I feel like, you know, if I were Agent 47, and I was, you know, plopped into a city where I had to, you know, eliminate a couple targets, I would be walking around exploring things and kind of jumping from rail to rail. So, you know, I think it's just like really masterful kind of level design in that way. And then the other thing is like the puzzles I think are really great. Like I think that they are true like lateral thinking puzzles where you know you get some information and then each time you pursue more information, you get little dribs and drabs that help you then solve the mystery of how to, you know, complete the assassination. And that's a kind of thinking that I really, really enjoy.
Yeah. The puzzles are really interesting because a lot of times, like, it's not even clear that you're dealing with a puzzle, right? Like it doesn't have four sides and six pieces that you're trying to squeeze together, right? Like you almost don't even realize you're piecing it together as you do it, which is like a really cool feeling when you like kind of like finish it and then kind of think back of like the steps, like the meandering steps that you took to get there is like, oh wow, like, you know, because I killed this person, like it opened up this window, or like because I like took this outfit, I was able to like get to this place that allowed me to do something, right? And it really is like kind of like, you know, sometimes it's as simple as like, oh, I need to get this uniform to get in there so I can get close and kill them, like fine, right? That's a puzzle. But then other times it's like it's almost like a post facto puzzle. Like you see the picture, but you didn't realize you were even painting it or something. It's kind of a neat trick that they pull off sometimes. So yeah, I really like the way that kind of all lays itself out. The other thing that I really enjoyed is the shooting itself, like mechanically, right? Like all of the movement and like combat stuff, like really does feel like pretty tight and visceral, like in a way that, like, you know, it's not like Battlefield or a Call of Duty where you need that to be super tight, but also like if it weren't tight, it would have really distracted from everything else going on. You know, like if you do all the work to get into position, but then like you've got really sloppy gunplay, it would have felt bad.
Totally.
So, but like it's really good. Like, and you know, like I said, like I took some of these missions where I was just like, ah, fuck it, I'm going to go one man army, you know? And it's like, I start with a pistol, I kill somebody with a bigger gun, I take a bigger gun, I kill more people. And like, I will just start like murdering guards until I get to my target. And then I'm going to kill them too. And then other times, like I, you know, snuck around and like actually like figured out like a way to like get a clean hit or like a clean window with which to do my hit or whatever. And like that, like so in Mumbai, right? Like the second part of Mumbai is like finding that like gang lord or whatever. And like, but he's like kind of in hiding in the slums. And so you have to like kind of like sneak around to like identify him. Mm-hmm. And I actually think it's a story mission. I don't know if it's required or what, but like, so anyway, so I identify him, he's walking through the street. Right. Mm-hmm. And so like, I'm like, okay, I've walked around this a little bit. Like I know there's the street level, there's like an underground, like, and then there's also like the roofs, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I bet if I run ahead, I can like get ahead of him on this road and then just like shoot him from above as he like walks under me. Like, wouldn't that be pretty ninja? and so like I do it, I like get there, like I wait till he's in the perfect position. He has a bodyguard, and I'm like, no one can see me from this spot. If I just like shoot him and walk away, like I bet I get away completely clean. And like, so I get in my spot. He walks up, I shoot him in the head, one shot, dead. I walk away, and like, I don't even have to uncrouch.
You That's know? Incredible.
Like, and then I just like, I get around the corner, I stand up, and I'm gone. You know, like just like dead guy in the street, chaos in Mumbai, and Agent 47 walks away and gets in a tuk-tuk, you know? It was like, it was one of the coolest like sequences, you know, which is really fun.
I love that because, you know, the story missions tend to be, when you follow them, they tend to be more elaborate. Like you end up like sneaking, you know, putting on disguise, sneaking around, and then finding, like, you know, causing a distraction, then poisoning something they're going to drink, or there's the one where you are tattooing the guy and you, what do you do? Oh, do you stab him? I can't remember.
Stab him in the ear.
Yeah, right. You dress up as like this like tattoo artist, and it's like this whole big elaborate thing. But you also can like what you did, like improvise and then completely reject the thing of like, let me do this elaborate face off disguise thing, just like shoot someone with a silenced weapon and like walk away like nothing happened. And that is really fucking satisfying as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That one, by the way, is maybe the dumbest disguise of all, because you get tattoos. Like, did you notice when you steal his outfit, you just get tattoos on your arm?
The thing that also doesn't hold together for me, this is like the one thing I couldn't stop thinking about, is that like you travel around different parts of the world, and sometimes you dress up as someone who would like definitely have like a different voice or a certain kind of accent or,
right,
you know, and it's like the voice thing is sort of the only, I feel like they've gone to lengths to make the AI pretty smart, like, you know, not as like kind of lumbering and goofy as in like some stealth games. Like I just feel like they've made all these things seem quote unquote realistic, but the voice thing just never, because you have to talk to people as like, you know, at one point you dress up as like a shaman in, yeah, Colombia, and I don't, and you, but you're just good old like Agent 47 with your Agent 47 voice. So that doesn't really hold together too much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even the tattoo artist, right? He's like got a British accent when you like waylay him and steal his outfit. But then like you walk in and like you're like supposed to be like famous from TV. Like everyone, right, would, right, recognize your, that's, voice. And they're, and like people are like bending over backwards. They're like, oh no, obviously it's just for the cameras. Like it's the real guy. Like,
totally.
It's,
yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's quite ridiculous, which, you know, I feel like is a really good segue into what didn't work about this game for us. So Shane, right, what were the things that were just kind of like falling flat for you?
Okay. So sometimes it's too transparent. Like the mission stories, especially like I talked about this a little bit in the first episode we did about this, where it's like the depth that you get out of a mission story is a lot of times just a vignette within the environment you're in, right? The, mm-hmm, person isn't critical to the overall story. So whatever you learn about them is like, you know, like, so I impersonated a tailor and I found out that like this crime boss wants a new dress, mm-hmm, you know? And it's like that in and of itself is interesting, but also like now that I'm just going from green dot to green dot on the map, like to like check boxes, you know, like, it doesn't give me anything for doing that. So in a way, like, it's actually less fun to follow a mission story, right? Like, if the mission story doesn't reveal something about the larger game, then I found the mission stories to be very disappointing. And it wasn't clear when that would happen, like when, mm-hmm, I would actually learn something interesting versus just do it. So I stopped, basically. And like, the flip side of that, though, like, where it was interesting was, like, sometimes, like, you'd finish it, you'd see the achievements, like for a mission, and it would be like, oh, like kill somebody. Like I remember in the training mission, it's like kill somebody with, or like eliminate the target with like emergency, like the emergency lifeboat.
Oh my god.
It's like, all right, how do I go through and manipulate like the world so that I can get this guy underneath it and me in position to hit the button to drop the emergency life raft on him. Right. And like when you figure it out, it feels great. So like those are the kinds of things where I wish you got that up front, right? And like with less transparency in how to do it, but like very clearly, like it's possible to do this, can you figure it out? Like, so that's where it like doesn't quite work for me as well, is like the mission story replaces like that kind of thing, mm-hmm, which I found incredibly fun, but I refuse to play most missions multiple times in order to really get through that experience. So I wish I had that up front rather than mission stories to lead me through, I guess, is my gripe.
Yeah, that's actually like, you're actually bringing up something that helps me think a little bit differently about what I was going to say didn't work. So I was going to say that, like, I think the game is just too hard and too opaque because, you know, it does sort of drop you in and doesn't really tell you what you're trying to do. But at the same time, the mission stories are really obvious and you are just kind of going from objective to objective. And I think that it's not necessarily that like it's too opaque, because some parts of it are extraordinarily transparent and easy, but in a way that's not satisfying. So I think really what it is that like the balance between like opaqueness and transparency is just bad. It's like, mm-hmm, you know, having it be where, having a game where it's either completely opaque, like how you were supposed to play, or totally transparent, is just not really a good balance. But actually, if these achievements were presented to you as things that you could try for up front, but then you had to figure out how to do them, I think that would actually be a really nice balance that I feel, yeah, like is just missing.
Yeah. And I think we should couch this a little bit with like, I've got 11 hours of playtime into Hitman. I would guess that you probably have around like 10 to 15 hours, mm-hmm, as well. Mm-hmm. This game is obviously intended that you do every mission multiple times. It tells you that up front,
right,
like in the tutorial, that you should replay missions to see, to learn new things and to experience it different ways. We completely rejected that because we're, mm-hmm, on a timeline.
Right. And also, right? Because I don't think either of us want to really play the game that way. Like, that's, yeah, the other thing, yeah, is that like, this is like a very important part of like talking about any kind of thing you consume is like, are you meeting it where it's at? Like, are you playing it the way it's sort of intended to be played? Are you interacting with it the way that like it's designed to be interacted with? And so I think like for both of us, the answer to that is like, not really.
Not really. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that like you said, I think that really informs like what our takeaways are about the experience of playing it.
Yeah. And I mean, like the other thing I have on my list, right, is like save games aren't actually that precise. Like when you manually save the game and like pick it back up, NPCs aren't in exactly the same position that they were in.
It's a really good point. I didn't notice that, but you're right.
But like, so like, you're like, okay, I'm going to try this here, right? Like, I'm going to try this takedown or whatever. Or like, I'm going to try to lure this guard out, and like you do it and fail. And it's like, fine, I save it, I reload. And then sometimes you find out that window is closed, right? Like the NPCs aren't in the exact same position that they were. Like, you know, some wandering idiot is going to witness it or whatever. Right. And it's like, that's very annoying to me, given that I'm going to play each mission once and move through the story. Whereas like, that isn't a big deal if you are truly playing, you know, several hours on every mission to try and get through every permutation of it. Like, the positioning of that one guard that one time is not critical to your play experience, right? And so like, they've made that compromise intentionally. And so it's like, I think it's just kind of important to note, right? Like, that wasn't what I wanted to do. That wasn't how I wanted to play it. And that was frustrating, but also kind of a nitpick, because it's really not what they wanted me to be doing, you know? And certainly like as a franchise, like they've proven there's plenty of audience for that. And I'm just not part of it.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, that's how I feel as well. I feel like there are people who like watch baseball games and follow their favorite team. And then there are people who pay very close attention to like how every team is doing, and they know all the statistics of different players. They know, like, I used to do that when I watched baseball games as a little kid. When I watched the Mets, I had that like that kind of like pad where you would like every single inning you would write down every single thing that happened. I don't remember. Do you know about this, Shane? Like, is this?
Yeah, you did scorekeeping. Like,
yeah,
you were a scorekeeper fan. That's adorable.
Hardcore.
That's like a lost art. That's such a lost art now.
I'm just having like total recall right now of like this special book I had and how I do it. And I went to a couple Mets games with my dad, and it was so fun to be like that obsessed, and it actually kind of helps me understand some of my personality traits as an adult. But I think that like, and there are people who play Hitman games like, you know, the scorekeepers, where they're like just really in tune with like every little thing, and they're going to play it a million times to perfect the executions and get all of the achievements and stuff like that. And we're totally the casual, like, tune in to see your favorite team playing a game, kind of a Hitman player.
That's absolutely spot on accurate.
I definitely want to get into like scorekeeping in 2021 now that I'm talking about it again.
So Sally, let's talk about what we would like to see more of. What in this game would we be happy if that became kind of a genre convention or got adopted by other games?
Okay, so I really love lateral thinking puzzles, mm-hmm. which are these puzzles where you're given a little bit of information and then you have to sort of explain, you're sort of given a scene and you're given a little bit of information about it. And then what you have to do is like in a dialogue between you, the player, and like the person who presented the puzzle, you ask questions, get the answers, and explain how the situation that you were presented with came to be. Mm-hmm. The key process is asking these questions of the person who gave you the puzzle, and they can only be yes or no questions. And right. I feel like the Hitman games do this really cool lateral thinking puzzle thing where, you know, you're dropped into a level, you're given a little bit of information, and then the question and answer process is like walking around and observing and also trying things like testing the boundaries of the world, testing the boundaries of the AI. And in doing that, gathering clues that allow you to solve the puzzle of like how to eliminate this target. I love lateral thinking puzzles. I think they're a really, really fun way to problem solve. And I don't really enjoy kind of traditional puzzle games. Like The Witness is the one that comes to mind. I mean, they're cool and interesting, but like they don't keep me interested in the way that these sorts of puzzles do. So I would love, and this is why also I'm like forever downloading random like murder mystery games and shit, because I'm just like trying to find the video game that allows me to do puzzles in the way I like to do them. And Hitman 2 is definitely the one that has done that the best. So I would love to see more of this in games. I would love to see it like not in murder sandboxes. It's one of those things where I'm always like, why is it that every time someone recommends a TV show to me, it's what it's about is that like a woman was brutally murdered and the police are solving it. Like, can there be fewer TV shows about that? And about like, can the stakes just be different? And I feel right. like it's kind of the thing about video games too. It's like, you're always killing people, which is, you know, not the case. There's a lot of games out there, but I would love to do some lateral thinking puzzles that don't involve murder, because as fun as Hitman 2 is, you are this person that goes around killing people, and the game goes to extreme lengths to make you feel okay about the people you're killing because they are cartoonishly villainous in every possible way. They really are. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're still in a murder sandbox. So I would love to see some lateral thinking puzzles presented in like different clothes. How about you, Shane?
I'm totally on that wavelength. And so I wrote like the thing that I noted down was mission stories as the concept. But the the reason why I like mission stories is because they frame up that puzzle. Right. What I didn't like about them was that they waypoint you. Right. So it's I go from green box to green box to green box. I go here. I do this. Right. But to me, if you introduce a mission story as almost like stumbling upon one of those lateral thinking puzzles and basically signposting for the player, like there is a way to use this information to like to solve this problem, right? To like to make this assassination, or you know, in any other genre, right? Or an RPG, right? Like there is a solution here if you go and look for it and find it. I think that's a really compelling difference in gameplay, right? And the concept of introducing the like the side quest is part of the main quest is like to me brilliant, right? Like this is the two birds with one stone that stresses me out about open world games, which is like I only want to go to this place once. Load me up on my side quest so I can get everything done in that place so I don't have to walk back to that like section of wilderness or whatever, you know?
Totally.
This is like this is that efficiency that just really appeals to me in RPGs, and like I wish more games did that as a way of doing their exposition, because it's also very clever. Like you said, like the game goes to great lengths to make sure that you know that these people are miserable pieces of shit. And it's almost invariably through these mission stories where you get to observe them being terrible pieces of shit and then don't feel bad about murdering them with their own robots or whatever. Right. not that I was ever going to feel bad, but like, you know, like I guess they needed to moralize it.
Totally. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I appreciate how villainous they make them because it does help me make me feel better, except that they pour it on so thick that it just sort of serves to make me hyper aware of the fact that I'm just going around killing people and the game is trying to make me feel better about it. And I think it ends up making me feel worse. So anyway.
Right. the very first mission, by the way, you have to kill a woman who's like racing a Formula One car, like in the most absurd vanity project of all time. But then it's like, okay, well, why do I have to kill this woman? Well, you just have to. And also she's like a war criminal.
Like, right. Exactly. Yeah.
It's like, I don't look, man, like, the name came up on the list. That's enough for me. Like, you didn't have to make her responsible for like Rwanda as well as like, you know, also a rich asshole who wants to be a Formula One driver or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Let's just like dispense with the pomp and circumstance and just like give me a name and let me go do the thing.
Exactly.
Let's just like end our conversation about this game by talking about just like one thing that stuck out to us. Like it could be a moment or a scene or a mechanic, just like a special moment that that you had with the game. Do you have one, Shane?
Sure. Yeah. So I really enjoyed that. Like I described it, that kill in Mumbai, right? Where I kind of snuck around. The other one was actually a mission that you didn't play, which is the last resort. It was the last mission of the DLC pack. And you go and there's three people you have to kill. One of them is like a host at a luxury resort. The other is like this CrossFit bro computer programmer. And then like the third is like the head of this company.
I'm so mad I didn't get to kill the CrossFit bro. I'm so mad. I might have to just buy that DLC.
So I was like full on, like, you know, there's mission stories. You get introduced to a target, like literally, like immediately, like you walk off a boat and she greets you.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, you know what? Fuck this. Like, I'm so done with dealing with these people. Like, so I just like crept around a corner, killed her with my pistol from range, like hid underneath like the elevated platform, like walked through like the water underneath, and then attached to one of the like pillars of this like dock, more or less, was a starfish, which I thought was interesting. So I picked that up, proceeded to walk over to the CrossFit bro, who was, I guess, leaving, you know, his gym to go get breakfast and just fucking threw a starfish at him and killed him in one shot. And I was like hidden in a bush and I didn't even have to move. Like nobody knew where he was. Nobody knew where he got killed from. I just walked away clean. And then I walked into the head guy's compound and had to shoot about 3,000 guards to get to him. So I kind of blew my whole stealth mission, but like whatever, it was totally worth it to kill that jerk off with a starfish. So that was my highlight. The last mission, second to last kill, starfish kill.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, when you told me like over Discord about that, I was like, I'm misunderstanding or Shane is mistyping. But no, in fact, you did kill someone with a starfish. That rules.
Literally a starfish.
Yeah. That rules. The thing that stuck out for me was just like the suburbs, the level where you're in the suburbs. It's definitely one of my favorite levels in like any game, just because I feel like you rarely see the suburbs depicted in a game that is about assassination. Like, you know, if you play The Sims, like I think you experience the suburbs, but like this is a game where you're going around killing people and you're in the burbs. And there's a lot of stuff you can do in the level, as there are in all the Hitman levels. But I feel like that level really gets at like a lot of the tropes and truths of like suburban life in a way that like, it's not like done in a hackneyed or mocking way, but just like, hey, you are inhabiting the reality of someone who lives or works in the suburbs in this level, like, because right. You have to like disguise yourself as like, you know, someone who like as a pest control person or a house painter or someone who's selling real estate. And I thought that was like really fun and a really weird choice, but like also a great one. And I just loved that level. It's definitely like one of my favorite levels in probably like any game.
Did you go to the backyard barbecue?
I did go to the backyard barbecue and I had to like find the missing propane. Did you do that where you had to like help the dude?
No, I didn't end up doing any of that stuff, but like I just kind of walked around and listened to how droll the conversations were. It was like the, I think the hosts, yeah, like the one guy needed the propane, right? And then like his wife, I think, was like just wanted to complain about her like microfilm projector. And how like there was no place for it in the house. So it's up in the attic and it's like it's telling you a place to take microfilm to learn information later. Like, you know, so it's lampposting it for you. But it just struck me as like the most like boring, like suburban, like married couple conversation of like, oh, I have this toy. Oh, it has to go in the attic. Like,
totally.
Oh, but it's my special toy. You know, it's just like, God, please kill me.
No, 100%. I thought it was done so well. There's also like a dude who's like obsessed with like the muffins that this like food vendor has. And he's like always hanging on the muffins, which I just feel like is also so realistic in such a perfect way. Yeah.
I had to do a mass murder at the muffin stand. And I felt kind of bad about ruining the poor muffin guy's day.
I know. I did too. I had to poison a muffin and I was like, look, you know, got to do what I got to do. I think we've probably said everything we can say about this game. Should we move on to a thing that we're excited about?
Yeah, let's do it. What are you excited about this week, Sally?
Okay, well, Shane, I am so excited about the TV show with, I think, probably the worst name of any TV show. The show Peaky Blinders, which is on Netflix.
Is it the worst?
I feel like I would have watched this show. So there are 5 seasons of it. I feel like I would have gotten into it 5 seasons ago if it had a better name.
Is it a whimsical British crime comedy?
No.
Okay. Well, then they've named it incorrectly. But Peaky Blinders sounds like a whimsical British crime comedy. And if they had made that show, it would be the perfect name.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, that's exactly right. So it is a show about basically a crime family in Birmingham in the 1920s. It stars Cillian Murphy and a bunch of other actors from the UK. It's really good. It is intense. It's violent. You know, it's kind of like it has like Sopranos vibes to me, just because it's like this family is doing a lot of crime, but also dealing with like their relationships with each other and also their inner lives and struggles. A bunch of the main characters are veterans of World War I and have, it deals with like trauma from the war, and it's really, really good. We're really, really enjoying it. We've watched the first 2 seasons. It's hard to binge because each episode is for sure like 50 to 60 minutes and pretty intense. But I like that about it because it means that we're not like flying through. We're actually kind of like taking it in. Cillian Murphy is like incredible and has the most captivating face. I've never seen a face like his. I just can't understand what's happening with his face. So Peaky Blinders on Netflix, kind of violent, but really good. Get into it. Shane, what are you excited about?
On the subject of kind of violent, but pretty good, Vikings has its final season on Amazon Prime or Prime Video, whatever it is, which is the story of Ragnar Lothbrok, who is, I guess, a real historical Viking, but basically a Viking, I don't know, a earldom. I don't know what a group of Vikings are called. A longboat, I guess. A longboat of Vikings.
Love it. Perfect.
But he's the first Viking to sail west, basically. Okay. And so he decides to invade England, basically. So it's about raiding England and then sort of the home front politics of the different like groups of Vikings and different bands or whatever, right? And sort of like his family, you know, kind of gets into some of the politics of religion and like the sort of like he captures a Christian monk who is sort of the, I don't know, in some way sort of your perspective character. Like he gets to gawk at how bizarre Vikings are. And, you know, it's brutal. It's violent. It's a little more rapey than I wish it was, but it's nowhere near Game of Thrones.
Okay. It's good.
And so that's good. And, you know, there's at least a fair amount of comeuppance for it. So if you've got it included, at least it doesn't get rewarded.
Okay.
But it is like and I don't know his name, but the guy who plays Ragnar has again, the most captivating face, right? Like his eyes, just the way that he acts with like little more than just like kind of like turning his head down or like kind of looking slightly side-eyed at something. Like he says so little and just does it in such a way. It's like, it's mesmerizing. Like you can't take your eyes off of him when he's on screen. It's pretty incredible. So anyway, it's an interesting time period. I think it's tries to be somewhat historically accurate, if not, you know, accurate to the legend.
Yeah.
But it's just a, you know, it's an interesting, well done show. I think it originally aired on the History Channel in the US.
Okay.
But I think it's Canadian, which I guess is the theme of 2020 and maybe 2021 for me is Canadian television between Schitt's Creek, Letterkenny, and this.
I love that. I love that that's your niche. This sounds good. Maybe we'll get into it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's six seasons and there are like 8 to 10 episode seasons. So it's not like insurmountable, but it's quite a bit. So
yeah. Okay. I feel good about that. Maybe we'll check that out and I'll report back.
Sweet. So I guess we did it.
We did it. That is it for this episode. We are going to next be playing the game Raji, an ancient epic, which came out in August of 2020. I'm going to be playing it on PS4. And so, yeah, we're going to talk about that for the next two episodes.
I am looking forward to that. That is the first game I have ever played that is developed by an Indian developer.
Yeah.
Like India-based developer, I guess is the accurate way to describe it. But yeah, so not your normal US or I guess Eastern European is the two genres we generally go for.
Yeah. I'm very excited to get into it. So in the meantime, please rate us and review us wherever you listen to podcasts.
And you can also follow us on Twitter at @CoopMoodPod with no punctuation. And you can follow me at @Mundangerous.
And you can follow me at @SallyT. And you can also email us at coopmoodpod@gmail.com.
And you can find us and other great gaming podcasts on the OneShot Network at oneshotpodcast.com.
Co-op Mood is produced by Shane and Sally. Edited by Lucas. Our music is Pixel Squirrel by Espresso Music. Logo design by Emily Cardamus.